This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
What up, folks? You heard it, Sharp Money. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher today, and we have a loaded show on tap. Chad Brown's going to be with us, ESPN Radio out of Denver at the bottom of the hour. Colorado seems like a very popular and happening spot as of this point right now, so we got a lot to get to over there in the Rocky Mountains. Mike Palm is going to be with us as well in the next hour. Not only are we going to talk contests because Dustin's got a sweet new hat that he can show off. Really good color, by the way. It's a very solid color. But I'm going to try to work Mike Palm for a free dinner that I owe somebody. We'll get to that in 4 p.m. Eastern hour. Jesse Newell, Kansas City Star, Chiefs beat reporter, will get the latest on Travis Kelce. And then Nicolotti's going to be with us, Alioti, Pac-12 network analyst, former Oregon D.C., as we get to what's going to happen with Oregon. With that, I have spent all morning writing the NBA betting guide. So I assume we're opening up with the association. You guys will do me that courtesy. I did a really good breakdown of the Los Angeles Clippers right before we got here. 850 words. Are you down with it?
I am, as long as it's got Junior Bridgman and we can talk about a couple of the other guys from the 80s Clippers. By the way, Junior Bridgman owns more franchises than anybody that played in the NBA.
I'll give you a world be free.
Lloyd free? Absolutely.
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, you could just drop that on December 25th because that's when the NBA season actually begins.
I thought it started April 15th.
Untrue. Untrue. I don't appreciate that. You guys are laughing at me. That is something that I do for a living. Please do not lessen that. No, we will begin, of course, with the National Football League and the overreaction that the market had yesterday. So Travis Kelce, of course, the story as to whether or not he is going to play the star tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs. The market kind of freaked out after the news came out, got to as low as 4 in multiple spots. We're starting to see that come back now. Lots of faraway places have 5s, 4.5s litter the board. No 4s are left. Amal, this we spoke about yesterday is the buy point when you get low enough here. And I think we actually did. It kind of hit on 4. Like, if it gets to 4, not the super key number, but you wouldn't expect it to get underneath that. If you're getting there, then you should probably buy back in on Kansas City, because when you get to 4, you're saying that a tight end, even a good one, as awesome as Travis Kelce is, you're saying a tight end is worth 2.5 points to the spread. That's pretty extreme, even given the unknown situation of the depth of the wide receiver room for Kansas City.
I would agree with you in the notion that it's not necessarily worth 2.5 points. However, at the same time, I think sometimes, because the way the scoring system in football works with 3 and 6 points, it's technically hard to quantify how much of a loss a player like Kelce is. He could theoretically be worth 3 points in the red zone because you end up kicking a field goal. You have a comfort level with having Butker, who's such a great kicker. And to me, I don't know where you come out, whether you think Kittle's the best or you think Travis Kelce's the best tight end in football. They're both future Hall of Famers in my estimation. He just gives Mahomes a comfort level and their play calling. One of my favorite things that they run is that kind of like that fake handoff inside, maybe throw an underhanded pass to Kelce. Looks like he's barely left the line of scrimmage.
Sidearm.
Yeah, I mean, they run so many great plays with him inside the red zone, and he is such a tough cover. I can appreciate what you're saying. I tend to agree with you on the 4. I would be looking at the Chiefs here. I think the numbers come down too far with Chris Jones and Kelce expected to be out. But for me, I think when you sit there and say Detroit right now, are they a 4-point dog on the road at Kansas City? Boy, that seems a little short.
Right, because here's the thing. So as you know, when I was doing my work in the offseason and all the modeling stuff that we kind of hit on yesterday, and you could talk to anybody about this, we know that the general home field advantage has come down. And I had it to about like 1.8 points in what it was worth when I was doing my work in the offseason leading up to what is now the start of the season tomorrow. So let's just round that up to 2. When you get down to 4, you're telling me that there's only a 2-point difference between the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs on a neutral field. I can't get my head around that.
I would agree with you completely. I love that point you just made. And one other thing I would add to it. In my estimation, the Kansas City Chiefs have the greatest home field advantage in the National Football League.
Sure. And not, look, in college, the discrepancies of home field vary different, like very much so. In NFL, it gets a lot tighter. But if there was a spectrum, Kansas City would be on the front end or the high end of that.
There's no question about it. I thought you brought up another great point, which is, are the Chiefs a 2-point neutral site favorite over the Detroit Lions? No. What are you laughing at over there?
He just missed. You brought up a great point. He goes, that's all I do, under his breath.
You know what's funny? I didn't hear him say that, but I heard him mumble something. I didn't catch it.
That's the whole point. Yeah? The audience gets it. By the way, excuse me if I don't look at you the entire time. I slept on my neck wrong, so like when I turn to look at you, it's just really stiff. You know, I'm getting old.
Yeah, tell Tom.
How old are you, like 32?
No. So I've made your neck for same thing. My neck's always, because I lay in bed and look at TikTok with my head like up like this.
Oh, okay. Well, me, it's just, you know, the nights when you get those hardcore sleeps where you're just out.
Out.
So I fell asleep wrong.
Good for
That's
you.
All it was.
Yeah. It's a humble brag.
I mean, it was a solid 4 hours. So
what?
What do you mean?
Solid 4 hours.
It's what you do when you got to grind, my friend.
It can never be too early to get ready for the NBA.
That's right. Well, when you're paid to do it, I would say there's never too early. So that's.
By the way, are you watching FIBA?
Yes.
I saw.
Oh, buddy, don't
Germany
started.
Eked out a win over Latvia last night. I know Goulet's going to be ticked that we just mentioned this, that all three people care.
Oh, I'll go even farther. Germany, USA. I've got USA to be eliminated in the semifinals at 6-1. So I hopefully they can lose to Germany. You can work your way off of that because you got 6-1 there. You can play around with it. I bet Canada at +450, and then the market freaked out during the warm-up games, went to 9-1, doubled up. So I've got two tickets on Canada to win this thing. They're in the semifinals as well. I had a big win today. So don't get me started on FIBA. I'm in. Wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning to watch these things. Let's go. What, Dustin, what are you shaking your head for? I'm fired up about this. What do you want? Passion.
Yeah, but not about basketball in September.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If you have passion in life, you can convince more people to come to your side of the aisle. And the bottom line
tweet
is right
us,
now.
Tweet us, at VSIN Live, at BJVT, at Amal Shah 1. Let us know, did that discussion make you care more about basketball
in
week one of the NFL?
It did not. No, we're just talking about it for a nanosecond. Calm down there, John
Goulet. Also, I would argue, thank you, good shot. I would argue sports bettors are freaks, right?
Yes.
So here's the thing. Not only is it just something, another thing to bet on, you get to watch it at 4 o'clock in the morning where nothing else is going
on. There's nothing you get to do at 4 o'clock in the
morning. Hold on a second. What did I say to you yesterday when I came in?
You said you had a great bet on a FIBA game.
Yes. USA was laying 16.5 against Italy, and they won by 30-something.
Coming off of a loss, right?
Exactly. It was a great spot for them. You don't think that's a better bet? The Chiefs aren't beating the Detroit Lions by 38 points.
But you didn't say it on the air yesterday, so our listeners didn't get that info, so they didn't win the bet.
Ooh, double P, pass posting. There we go.
So why not? Everybody on social media does it.
There's a lot of people that are up like 75 units coming into the NFL season.
And that's only in like the last 6 weeks.
Yes, that's very true. They're just grinding away on the on FIBA World Cup.
Okay, mister, you want to talk about this Lions game. Who do you like in this game?
It's a great question. Going to see if that line moves anymore. I think I might be jumping in on the Chiefs.
So you think you haven't, and you haven't told anybody anything that's of value at this point in time?
No, because I'm the producer and you're the host. You're the one who has to come with things you have to say.
I disagree with you.
I will come with this. I laid 4.5 with Kansas City. So how about that? I think that all indications are Kelsey's going to play. Even if he doesn't, I think that
I don't think he's going to play.
Hold on. I don't either. But hold on. I got a quick question since you mentioned the 4.5.
Yes.
I get in this argument with a friend of mine who I really respect. You know my buddy Andy. Yeah. You and I talk about this all the time. He is a big advocate at 4.5 of buying down to 4. I am not a fan of it. Where do you guys stand on that?
I think my math may be wrong on this, but I do find that like 2 and 4 pop up more in recent years because of teams going for two and then and then teams going for it on fourth down and then miss, you know, like all these risk takes end up with changing the math of our key numbers, I think.
What's your thought process on that?
I don't think we would have a large enough sample size for me to actively go buy off of 4 yet. Or 4.5, excuse me.
The Congressman Jonathan Von Tobel has said.
You know what I like to do,
though? I actually agree with you, though.
Right, well, that's, I mean,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, but, like, have you ever lost, when you lose a bet, when you don't buy the hook, like, it is one of the most, like, soul-crushing feelings in the world.
I don't, you know, there's a couple of games I can remember very vividly. One was Oklahoma State, Texas A&M, line was 3. I took A&M on the road money line. They lost 38-35, and I didn't take the 3. But I loved A&M in that spot.
Sure.
I wasn't as upset as other people would be. I just thought, hey, you know what? It was a play I probably should have made with the +3, but I thought they were going to win the game. My argument in those.
No, I mean in the four and a half.
Same comparable situation, though, is what I'm saying. So I don't know. It depends on where you come out on that.
I would say, because I wanted to look this up, and this study stopped at 2020. So we have two seasons of data that haven't been accounted here for. But if you go back up to 2020, the point margin that increased the most after the extra point rule and everything like that were 5-point games.
Yep.
So
because
and the
3-5.
Yeah, so you know, when we're talking about this buying off of it, that's why again, I think you want a larger sample size to really start to again, because what are we talking about? You're laying what about how much is buying off a 0.5 again?
It depends on the number.
Yeah.
If it goes from 4.5 to 4, you're looking at potentially 130.
Yep.
If you go from 4 to +4.5, then you're looking at -120.
But since that study, you know, since those stats stopped being accumulated, all that's happened is people go for it more now. So I'm very curious to see what the updated – it could still be off. It still could not be true.
You looked at me like you had something to say.
No, I didn't actually.
You looked at me like I'm going to school this kid right now.
I was just thinking how hot it is in here.
I'm sweating.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
I might undo another button.
I'm not going to lie, actually. I'm a little nervous wearing white today. Like, I'm gonna keep it tight like this. It also makes the delts look a little bit better than they really do. But, yeah, I'm going to kind of keep it tight here a little bit today. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, Latvia. We got to talk
about it. What a mess of a segment.
What are you talking about? We've hit on the National Football League. We've hit on FIBA World Cup. We've hit on betting strategies when it comes to buying off of points.
Yeah.
I would argue that this was a phenomenal first 10 minutes.
Look, I'm the only Latvian at this table, and I don't care about that game.
Actually, they're not even in it anymore, so I just want to throw that out there. All right. So, actually, are they? I have to double check. I don't even know when I've been watching this. All right. So, with that, the update is the bone bruise. We should note that is the official injury for Kelce. It's like they have noted, it's a bone bruise. Dustin doesn't think he's going to play. I think that there's an argument he's going to. What's up?
No, I was going to say, I don't think you play him. You've got additional 3 days off. You've got 16 more games after this. The Lions are a non-conference game, so even if you suffer a loss, you have Jacksonville coming up. And the reason why the Jacksonville game is important, which is on the road, it could come down to down later in the season, head-to-head matchup for seeding purposes. I know we don't look at it much in the National Football League, but non-conference games, actually, those losses are not as detrimental.
I would say I would agree with you, but if you're a team like Kansas City who's going to be in the running for a one seed, I would think that every game counts.
Argument,
and especially in a small sample size season like 17 games. But all right, we'll take our break here. We have plenty of FIBA World Cup breakdown to come to you a little bit later in the show. I think we're going to spend about like 20 minutes on it or so. But we have a lot left to get to, including we haven't heard from Matt Nagy. We got to talk about that because Patrick Mahomes does have a history of balling out in these week one games. And we still have an update on what's going to happen along the defensive line for Chris Jones. Don't go anywhere. It is Sharp Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Best Thursday of the year is coming up, folks, and it's all about NFL opening night. Football's back, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is hooking new customers up with a can't-miss offer to celebrate. Place your first $5 NFL bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Don't wait till kickoff to get in on the hype. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code SHARP. New customers get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. It's code SHARP only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. We do have breaking news in the National Football League. Two bits of news really quickly. The first of which is Travis Kelce officially listed as questionable, so a chance that he could still play. I don't think anybody's really surprised by that in terms of the listing of questionable. Even if the Chiefs don't think he's going to play, gamesmanship to list him as questionable, write them all and put him out there. The second bit of news is a little bit more impactful. Sources, according to Adam Schefter, Nick Bosa has agreed to a five-year, $170 million extension with the San Francisco 49ers. That includes $122.5 million guaranteed by a wide margin. It will make him the highest-paid defensive player in the history of the National Football League. Obviously, questions about the availability of Nick Bosa and what that was going to mean for them. The holdout's over. He gets five, 170, 122 guaranteed.
$34 million per year. Not a bad job if you can get it.
Yep. Well, and it speaks to, again, this was part of what we're talking about with Jones, and I wonder what this is going to mean for him, right, when you're talking about two premier defensive linemen holding out at the same time and looking at it, what it's going to mean for a guy like Jones and what it means for his holdout, or if we're even close. Maybe that means something there, too, for Kansas City. But either way, when you're looking at it from that perspective, not the market getting set, but when you're looking at it, it is at least impactful from that note. And the San Francisco 49ers get their best, their best player on the field.
Yeah, they got so much talent. I can argue for different guys, but you're right. Nick Bosa is probably their best player. Chris Jones is 3 years older. He just turned 29. Nick Bosa is going to turn 26 in October. I expect Jones to get a comparable type of deal. If you're him, you're excited about this because you know you're looking at probably in the range of a five-year deal that's going to be a minimum of 150, probably something closer to 160 to 165. Yeah. And I would assume Chris Jones is okay if they say, hey, we're coming at 160, we're going to give you $32 million per or what have you. I don't know if he's looking necessarily to be the highest paid guy, but I think he's got a good jumping off point.
And we should note, too, different positions, right? Defensive end as opposed to defensive tackle.
Right.
I think, you know, they're not interchangeable, but they are different, but still gives you an idea maybe of what Jones might be looking for. I don't know if he'll hit the guaranteed money because defensive end is slightly more impactful, but defensive tackles can be there as well. All right, with that, an update, too, in the number. For those who weren't with us earlier, that number was 4.5 across the board, 5 in a lot of faraway places, so I'm sure we'll get back up to that point. With that, I wanted to hit on something. We mentioned Denver, And I mentioned the money splits for the game for Nebraska and Colorado, Amal. I know people like to read into something like this, so we'll see if this is actually going to be somewhat impactful or notable. So this morning, late last night, I was looking at the splits and the number for Colorado and Nebraska. Late last night, earlier today, we're sitting at 3.5 pretty much everywhere. We noted it. We talked about it yesterday. We're sitting at 3.5. We are back down to 3 for Colorado across the board with a heavy percentage of support, we'll say, on the side of Colorado. I know a lot of people like to read into that, but when you look at it from that perspective, I am going to be fascinated to see if we can get underneath this 2.5 mark for Colorado and where it's going to go.
Well, to me, I look at a couple of factors involved. Obviously, a lot of affinity for the Buffalo simply based on the performance we saw against TCU, Nebraska's ineptitude on offense against Minnesota. One other thing I think that's crucial when you look at playing the Buffalo's guys that comes into play is the altitude. When you play in Colorado, in Folsom, that second half, it starts to wear on you. If you've never had the opportunity to run at an altitude or in a place that's high up, it really becomes a challenge in the second half of football games.
Well, let's ask our next guest about this. Chad Brown's with us. You can follow him on Twitter, ChadBrown94. He's going to be able to call for this game as well, so he'll see this up close. Chad, we appreciate some time. Let's just start with an overview of this out in Denver, like in Colorado in general. What is the excitement level for Dion, the Buffs, and especially after pulling off an upset after being a 20.5-point underdog?
The excitement level is off the chain. I mean, literally, it is just bananas out here. The doubt, maybe not doubt's not the right word, but the needing to see what was going to happen, I think was strong amongst, you know, folks who were majorly involved in football. The public was obviously very into what Coach Prime brought to CU, so much passion, so much attention, so much possibility. But me as a, you know, longtime football guy, I've never heard of a roster turnover like that. I've never heard of 88 new guys on one team in one offseason. How do you bring all those guys together? How do you make sure that everyone's on the same page? How do you install new coaches, new players? A lot of new players just since fall camp started. How do you do all that? Well, the results showed on Saturday. They did it exceptionally well. You know, Shador Sanders passed over 500 yards. That's a school record. They were flying around on both sides of the ball. They played with passion. They played with energy. They played with tempo. They played with a chip on their shoulder. They exceeded my expectations. And I think from a general public perspective, they also exceeded those expectations as well.
Chad, you mentioned, like, you don't know. And I think it's pretty fascinating because we can use Texas State as an example as well, right? They had the second most transfers. They overhauled their entire roster, too. And then they go pull a 20-point upset as well. They were 24.5-point underdogs against Baylor. They went outright. So Colorado and Texas State hand-in-hand, like, maybe this is something we're going to start to see. Maybe not teams actively overhauling their rosters, but we just don't know when you bring in that much different talent what that's going to look like.
College football in week one is always so fascinating because I think every single coach is nervous about what is my team going to be? How are they going to show up in week one? Obviously, in the NFL, you get the benefit of preseason games. I know you can do some inter-squad scrimmages in college football, but that doesn't really tell you who you are versus someone else. So for the Buffs to show up as they did versus, say, Ohio State, who's predicted to be in the playoff, they only put up 21 points. Mm-hmm. And their offense struggled with not new coaches, with not a whole ton of new players, versus CU who exploded with new coaches and new players. I think we are entering a new age in football where some of the previous installed limitations on the field work and all those things are creating a more of a level playing field. And it's about the coaches who can best take advantage of the limited amount of work you get with these kids versus what used to exist 10 or 15 years ago.
Chad, I want to ask you about a game you covered last week because we'll be talking about these two teams throughout the course of the season. What did you look at and think of with Florida? Is this a 500 team, maybe barely bowl eligible? They can get better. And then Utah, without Cam Rising, how far can they go in Pac-12 play? And with Rising in the lineup, are they a threat to three-peat in the league?
I think to go to Utah first, I think they still are a threat to repeat as the Pac-12 champions. Without Cam Rising, they still played great defense. They still ran the ball. They still were the cleaner playing football team by far over what Florida brought. In Florida, last year they were ranked 99th against the run defensively. They played the run much better against a Utah team that runs the ball really well typically. But offensively, they couldn't get any rhythm going until probably halfway through the third quarter. So is that a week one thing? Or is that what they're going to be like all season long? It's impossible to know what a team is before week one. And then I think for your ability to diagnose who a team actually is after week one is also pretty difficult.
All right, so let's build on that then. Is it then safe to assume that even despite Nebraska looking awful, that they could be better against Colorado this weekend?
I've always said you make your biggest improvement from a player perspective from year one to year two. And I think there are going to be a significant percentage of teams coming up into week two of the college football season. They're going to make a massive leap. Coaches got a chance to see who they are on the field. Coaches have a chance to make some adjustments. I think every coach comes in to week one, either offensively or defensively as a play caller, and thinks they know what they want to do. But what you want to do and what your team can do are so often very different things. So I would expect a higher-performing Nebraska team to show up if I were Coach Prime. And then also on the other side of that, you know, the Buffs come out that thing super high emotions, feeling so great about themselves. You don't want to break your arm patting yourself on your back. It is only week one. And so for those players who have, you know, played the doubt cards for so long, how long can they keep that chip on their shoulder? That's probably not actually even a chip there, because everyone knows they're talented. We just were uncertain as to how quickly they would be as they showed last week against TCU.
Chad, we have about 30 seconds. Are there things from the Colorado defense you saw on Saturday that can slowly improve that gives them hope coming up as they move forward?
There were some tackling issues. I think there were some assignment issues that will be cleaned up. But that defense wasn't great. Let's face facts. They gave up a ton of yards. They gave up a ton of yards rushing. I'm sure Nebraska and Matt Rhule are looking at that and how to exploit that. So they've got to find a way to be better gap sound. And they have to tackle better, particularly on the second and third level.
Chad, we appreciate some time, man. Have a good call. Do great work on the radio over the weekends. Thank you, dude.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, guys.
Chad Brown, Compass Media, ESPN Radio as well. It is a day of breaking news. We'll build on this throughout the show. Mike Pond's going to join us here on the other side. But Terry McLaurin dealing with turf toe. Question for week one. Told the media, quote, "That's my plan in terms of playing for week one." So we'll see if that is actually going to come to fruition. We'll take our break here. We come back second hour of Sharp Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, live from the D Las Vegas.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Second hour of the program. It's Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher today. And look who shows up. We got him for the next 30 minutes. Mike Palm. You see him all over the place. Host a live bet Saturday on Lombardi Lines on Fridays. Yes, there we go. See, I memorized it all. What's up, man?
Fridays, yes. Welcome to Bar Canada. Welcome. I know you guys have come here as civilians many times in the past to enjoy watching and betting the games. And welcome for this being your home and for filling in for PM this week.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah, it's great to have JBT on with us, but I'll tell you what, the name is kind of inappropriate. Bar Canada, it's hot as hell here.
So, but we're going to work on it. Maybe these lights can be adjusted. Maybe there's not as much heat here. Maybe we can get another air handler over in this section. Saturday afternoon with Ben Wilson was pretty toasty up here. I think I lost about 8.5 pounds.
Good for you. Good for you. I've got to tell you.
Playing goalie, huh?
I've been here as a civilian, you're right, but I had never. I'm going to give him a pop for a third straight day. I had never had a Labatt Blue before I did the shows here.
Really?
Oh, bro, that is a good beer.
It's a terrific beer. There's a wide variety of beers here as well. Mitch likes this Italian beer that they have up here when he comes. The name of it offhand.
Not Stella, is it?
No. Oh, okay. It's some Italian beer. This Cronenberg I've been introduced to up here. Have you ever had it, Cronenberg? Very good as well. So there's a good variety of beers up here. And it's actually, if you want to hear the games, and Amal can attest to this, if you want to hear the games, it's the best place at our property to be. You know, the sports book is very, very loud, and but if you want to hear the play-by-play, the main game, a lot of people choose here, like for March Madness, mm-hmm. over the ballroom just because they can hear the sound more clearly.
Test that out tomorrow.
Can't wait. Looking forward to that. We're going to watch the KC game here. I'll tell you what I just remembered. When the three of us last time we got together here at the D at the Ballroom, we were watching March Madness. It was Ja Morant and Murray State taking on Florida State.
Oh,
yeah, and I remember. Yeah, I remember. And I remember these five dolts came in and bet Murray State. And I said to Mike, I should go put more money on Florida State. I already unloaded the clip on them.
Wow.
I was like, I remember. And those guys, they were down 25 about 10 minutes into the game.
Unlocked the memory. I was on Murray State in that one, too. It was one of those where you hear somebody cheering, so you kind of get more aggressive with your cheering because you're like, come on, let's go.
I told Mike, I said, don't worry about it. I said, I like JVT, but he's on the dead wrong side here.
Who knew Ja was packing back then?
pretty high probability. All right. So let's talk about the contest first. How's it shaping up? I know that the overlay for, Survivor has been getting closer and closer.
Yeah. So these are the numbers as of 1 o'clock, just a few minutes ago, Pacific time. Survivor up to 74.52. I mean, there's an outside shot. We hit the 8,000 tomorrow on Thursday. I don't think we can get there in the millions. I mean, we were 1,400 short last year, the 6 million. We came back with the same guarantee. We're at 42.68. I think we'd be lucky to get to 5,500. Here's the breakdown today. There's been 322 between all our Nevada properties today, 229 survivors, 93 in the millions of all.
There's one right there.
Well, I'm going to cut into your number here shortly. I think you're going to get
millions.
There.
You're going to do some millions or some survivors?
Going to do both.
What's your breakdown? You did the full house, 15, 10, and 5 them all?
No, here's the funny thing on Survivor. I don't really understand why people do a ton of entries, like beyond a couple to a few, because after a while you start to have carnage. Remember one thing. You've got to make 20 picks in Survivor throughout the entirety of the season. So you are actually utilizing 63% of the teams. You don't want to be in a situation where, okay, if you use team A here and then all of a sudden another time, you're almost guaranteeing that certain entries are going to be going by the wayside.
Somebody asked me that question. They said, isn't 5 or 6 really the optimal number of plays and not 10?
Yes, absolutely.
To get into Survivor?
They're correct.
I can see arguments both ways. You know, I did my panel, the preview panel up here a couple Saturdays ago with Wes Reynolds, Mike Somich, Dr. Eric Eager, and then Dylan Sullivan, who's our chief NFL market maker here at Circa Sports. And the audience provided a lot of the questions. There were a lot of Survivor-based questions, and they asked them to rank the importance of criteria when they make a Survivor selection. And they threw in home team, and they threw in divisional as part of it. The panel, to a man, said it's more important to choose non-divisional games than to choose home teams. I know you try to do both of them all. Stay away from road teams and stay away from divisional games.
Yeah, absolutely. Division opponents have a lot more familiarity. On the road, we see teams. You look at every sport. Look at baseball, perfect example, JVT. You see the pricing of a team at home compared to on the road.
Right.
Completely different. And I think the value is still there, even though the home field advantage is, JVT, you alluded to earlier in the show, you thought about a 1.8 points in terms of home field advantage. To me, it still has some value there in terms of it, but got another strategy that I employ, and it's an important one for me in terms of how I do it. Not going to share it, but the reality of it is, no, listen,
what are we
here's
doing
the thing.
Here?
Oh, we got $8 million at stake. If you want to give me $8 million, I'm willing to share everything with you.
That's what your salary was. I assume that you'd be fine.
Dude, you'd be lucky if I get 8 shekels. I mean, the bottom line is, look, the key – people are talking – let's use week one, for example, guys. Mm-hmm. I know I'm putting you on the spot, JBT. I don't know how much you've thought about it. But if you look at week one, Mike, who would you pick and who would you pick?
Here's the problem. I said this 6 weeks ago that I thought the Commanders would be
– number one.
A chic pick. But now they're going to be like more than 50% of the entries, I think. And it's at a point where – I don't know if you want to be – at least you don't want all your entries to be the consensus pick, right? I just – when are you also going to use them? And this should be the Daniel Snyder lift game. That crowd should be finally a partisan crowd. This is a team they should pummel. We've seen what's going on in Arizona, mm-hmm. right? I don't think people will use Baltimore because I think you want to save Baltimore. Maybe some people will go in on the Vikings. Maybe they're going to split their entries between Commanders and Vikings. I think that's the most probable – a ratio that you'll get.
My thought was at the top of the list was Minnesota and then Baltimore. Those are the top two.
Wouldn't consider doing the Commanders.
No, I'm not big on Howell. I think there's a much larger probability than people expect that Howell goes out there, lays an egg, and you're talking about like a one possession game that you've got to sweat out for the Commanders.
I agree with his assertion on Washington. However, with that being said, I will take Washington in week one.
Will you throw all of your picks behind one team in week one?
Absolutely. I'm not worried about that.
Are you going to try to get through 4 or 5 weeks?
Call me in week 12.
Are you going to try to get to Thanksgiving? But you're going to split your picks at some point before Thanksgiving, I would.
Probably not.
No, you don't think
so? Listen, I don't understand this notion that you're going to split them up. What is the point of trying to have just, oh, great, I got one entry to week 12? I want to try and have as many as I can. So that way when you wind up in those weeks like the Chargers versus the Dolphins, which I think is a complete coin toss game, you could go either way. You know, the argument as well is so many people are on the Commanders that they lose. But here's the problem. You don't win the contest if the Commanders lose. You just eliminate a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is I think people look at too much that they're playing against other people. You are not. You are facing yourself in the schedule. That's more important than what other people are doing.
Makes sense. I would also say one of the teams that I would strongly consider before the injury to Kelce was Kansas City. I'm not really big on the Detroit Lions. I think there's a lot more volatility there because the total and there's a chance without Jones. That's something there. But the Chiefs were not near the top, but they were one of the ones under consideration.
I like that pick. I don't think a lot of people are going to take the Chiefs.
Right.
But I agree.
You know, there's the angle you can re-enter if you blow the pick, right?
Well, and I would assume, by the way, going back to the numbers, you're probably going to get up to 8,000 on the people who buy back in after Thursday night, right?
That's now, we only had 36 last year that did that.
Okay.
That made a pick. I think there was like 90 and 36 of them had the Rams and then bought back in, right?
It's actually not a bad call by you. Here's what you really should do. Do we have the money line price up on Detroit here in this game?
Give it to
you
in a sec.
Yeah, and what you do is, and you could lose in case of a tie, but what are the odds of a tie occurring?
You take used to put that prop up. Will there be a tie at the end of Survivor?
Plus
the greatest thing that ever happened.
Yeah, plus 180, plus 190, depending on where you get the number. You bet $525 on the other side. You cover the entry cost if the Lions win the game. Right? Then you can come back and re-enter. It's actually a free play in essence, but the only thing is now you don't have the Kansas City Chiefs available, which is a team you're probably going to want to have as the season progresses.
Makes sense. Look at you. You're smart.
I tell you one thing. Listen, we have great and intelligent people at our network, but when it comes to hedging, I will put all my ducks on Mike Palm and I. Nobody hedges more than Mike and I.
Monetizing. Hedge is a dirty word in this business.
Oh, God.
It does so. I mean, we've been attacked.
I can tell you this. The guy who owns the Mets, his guy got busted for insider trading for hedging on a stock where they were not going to get FDA approval on a drug. And that's why the guy ended up doing 7 years.
I was on with Mitch and Paul a couple weeks ago, and Brad – or I was filling in for Mitch, and Brad Powers was the guest a couple Thursdays ago. And we were talking about Hawaii,
sure.
Stanford, and he had gotten Hawaii plus 10 or 10 and whatever the number was.
Yep.
And at the time, it was 3.5. And he says, you know, if this number gets to 3 – Stanford's the correct play. So the question was, well, if it gets to 3, what portion of the bet that you made on Hawaii at 10 are you going to make on Stanford? He said, I don't think I'm going to make any because I'm so happy with the seven points of closing line value. But if that's the proper bet to make, I'll take that middle surrounding 3 key numbers. That's just my philosophy, right?
Well, no, hold on a second. It contradicts what everybody says on this network. Everyone goes closing line value. Well, if there's so much closing line value at 7, then why would you not go, let's say for simple math, you put $110 on Hawaii and then you put $110 on Stanford. So in essence, you're betting $10 to win $200. Mm-hmm. That would be the prudent play every day of the week and twice on Sundays.
20-1 on 3 through 10.
On 3 through 10, if you're telling me that the odds makers are so perfect at what they do.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, I think the closing line value discussion is over the large sample, we know how that goes.
Sure.
But when it comes to that unique scenario, it would make a lot more sense.
And it actually got to 2.5.
Right.
That's
amazing. The other part. I mean, once you get to 2.5, I think if you're in somebody like Brad's position, there's no way you pass up not laying 2.5.
But Josh, by the way, I really respect – I mean, I might respect him more than anybody on college
He's tremendous. Yes. He's absolutely tremendous. But Johnny Avello and I have talked about this. There's a fear factor with people in terms of a line move, particularly in college football, that is completely unnecessary. You know, we were sitting there talking about before we came on the air right now, we're talking about the Florida State LSU game, the game getting to 3. And so my question to everybody always is, are you betting this game with the idea that Florida State's going to lose by 1 or 2 and you're hoping for the push on 3?
Right.
I mean, like, if you're that concerned about this matchup, then don't bet the game.
The general thought would be if you're betting an underdog, you expect them to win at a higher probability. Yeah,
you would have looked at the money line. I mean, you were convinced Florida State was going to win the game. I didn't worry about the point spread.
I said the wrong team is favored. I said Florida State's going 12-0. They all looked at me like I was crazy. I said the Seminoles they had 94% production back. Our prop bets. I said Florida State on their alternate win total. They're going to win the ACC. They're the best team in that conference. I've said it all summer long. When you look at returning production in college football, they were number one at 94%.
Amal's going to stay here. Calm down. Take a break. All right.
Just get fired up with college football.
All right, we'll come back. We'll hit the week one schedule as well, of course, because we do have an injury that has made the market go a little haywire. Mike's going to stick around as well. Sharp Money here on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings rolling out Happy Hour Bet Boosts each day this week. Today's Happy Hour Superstar Super Boost, hot off the presses, is Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson to record 50-plus receiving yards in Week 1, boosted from minus 250 to plus 100. Head to DraftKings now to take advantage of today's Happy Hour Boost, available until 9 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, final hour of Sharp Money. It's Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw, Dustin Swedelson are here, so let's talk a little more college football. Nick Aliotti is nice enough to give us some time. Pac-12 network analyst, longtime Oregon DC as well. Nick, we appreciate it. So let's just start, of course, exactly where everybody is in the Pac-12. Colorado goes on the road, gets a big win over TCU, now comes back to play host to Nebraska. I want to pick your defensive coordinator brain. What'd you see from Colorado's defense? Because that's my big hang-up is TCU, I didn't think they got great quarterback play, still put up quite a bit of offensive production. What'd you see from Colorado's defense?
Well, not much, really. Not much at all. And I think that TCU made a huge mistake. They were averaging, I believe, 7.1 yards a carry. Yep. And should have kept pounding the ball. Obviously, let me digress a little bit. Colorado was extremely impressive, particularly a team coming out under a new coach on that first drive and going down and scoring. I thought that was fantastic. But the jury's still out, obviously, on Colorado and Colorado's defense also. But TCU, I think, you know, they put up 42 points and lose. You shouldn't lose a game scoring 42 points. But my hat's off to Colorado, but the jury's way out on Colorado's defense.
Coach, let's take a look around the league. USC's offense looks like it's going to be elite, but can Alex Grinch and this defense be good enough when you play Penix, Cam Rising, Bo Nix, and some of these other teams, and including DJ Uiagalelei at Oregon State?
Great question. I think that offensively, you look at USC guys, and they're going to put up 40 points a game, it looks like, no problem. But those teams that they that you mentioned and that you play down the road have that kind of offense also to put up those kinds of points. You know, the first 2 weeks, USC really wasn't challenged. I didn't think they looked great against San Jose State. Didn't get a chance to see a lot of the Reno game. I'll go back, the Nevada game. I'll go back and look at that. But they really haven't been challenged yet. But defensively, they're going to need to take a big step, in my mind, from last year. And in the first game, I will say this. I thought not only was the defensive line not stout, but I thought USC's offensive line gave up way too much pressure in that first game. They didn't look great to me either. So that could be an issue moving forward because they don't want Caleb getting hit too many times.
If we focus on USC's defense really quickly, when you watch it, do you think it's, and even go back to last year, is it a scheme thing? Is it an athlete thing? Like, what do you think the overall flaws are?
Well, everybody always wants to go to the athlete thing. They have enough good athletes.
Right.
What it is, in my opinion, men, is they're too gimmicky. I haven't studied them this year yet, but last year they were too gimmicky. Too many things, too many defenses. Too many line movement instead of just lining up and playing your gap and letting guys know where they fit. And to me, that was their downfall. Just had too much in their defensive package. And when you have too much, you can't practice too much. And your guys can't play as fast. When you have less with great athletes or better athletes than most people you line up against, just be sound, be simple. Make sure they got that so they could play fast and end up playing plays instead of trying to out-scheme people. So I'm going to be honest. I haven't seen enough of USC's defense this year to be that critical. But last year, without a question, way too gimmicky.
I love that breakdown. Kind of staying on that theme a little bit. When you are facing a team like we saw Oregon take on Portland State over the weekend, destroyed them, from a defensive coaching standpoint, or even from an offensive coordinator standpoint, Are you just minimizing in certain matchups where you know you're going to probably win comfortably, you're just better than the other team in terms of what you're potentially putting on tape for future opponents because you know you can just roll the ball out there and you're going to win those games?
Well, I think the very first game, yes. I think the very first game, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. And when you're when you outmatch a team, I don't think Oregon did anything that showed too much. They just basically ran their base offense. And I remember in our first game, even when it was a tough opponent, we just practice and do what we did all fall and all spring ball. Because you don't know what you're going to see. And oftentimes what you do see on tape, guys, really changes. So you have to get that feel calling a game from the press box. At least the good ones do after watching what they're trying to how they're trying to attack you, what you need to change up or what you want to stay with your defensive calls to combat what they're trying to do. But I think, yeah, I think in a game like that, Oregon was very simple, very vanilla, but wanted to showcase Bo Nix, Franklin, and their running backs.
Nick Aliotti with us, longtime Oregon defense coordinator, analyst for the Pac-12 Network. All right, let's take a big view of this conference as a whole. You know, we were talking about this the other day, which is I think, Nick, this conference is going to be very good. There's a lot of good quarterbacks. There's a lot of good teams. But is there a chance this league kind of cannibalizes itself because they're so good and they miss out on a berth in the college football playoff despite having teams that could be worthy to do it?
Absolutely. When they go to 12 teams, if this conference was this year, which it's not, we know moving forward it's, yeah, a lot of unknowns, but it looks like it's gone. But we won't go there. If it was next year, there's 7-8 really good teams in this league. And that is a very, very big issue. You better bring your A game every weekend because, you know, nobody's a cupcake, but there's probably, and I'm not going to name teams, there's probably about four teams that you play, five maybe, that those top of the upper echelon teams in our league, which I think are six or seven of them, are going to win. But then you're going to play week in and week out. You know, let's just take Utah. They're going to play SC. They're going to play UCLA. I don't know who they missed this year, but they might play Oregon or Washington because I don't have the schedule in front of me. They might play Oregon State. Those are tough games. And conversely, the teams I just mentioned have to play Utah. This is one example. So you really have to be good. You really have to have some luck, and you really have to be on your A game, and hopefully you don't lose more than two games because the type of schedule this year, a two-game loss, two-game championship, if you go 11-2, depending on what happens above you, you'd have a chance. But cannibalism is a real thing in this league this year.
Coach, great point by you. When you look at the top three teams at the near the top of this league, Utah, USC, and Washington, Oregon, you know the program very, very well. They were horrific against the pass last year. Can they improve enough to be able to slow down and allow Bo Nix and the offense to be able to do things? Because Penix, Caleb Williams, and Cam Rising, I don't know if there's a worse trio you got to face in any conference in college football.
No. You're exactly right. And then DJ, as we mentioned, is going to be tough. And Dante Moore, if they play UCLA, and I don't think they do, would be a tough out. You know, Oregon's a very good football team. They're one of the teams I think that has a chance. They're very good. I'm not a homer. I'm a realist. They're a good team. They were bad last year in the secondary. But I noticed when they played Portland State, it was five new starters with returning guys in the secondary. So they've upgraded there, or at least in their mind they have. I think Oregon will be in every game and has a chance to win this championship this year. Really, I need to see some of these guys play against somebody that's better, and that's going to happen this weekend. There's a lot better games going on this weekend, and so I'm going to have a better idea what these teams are all about.
Is there a better athlete in the country than the Oregon Duck with how many push-ups he had to put out there?
Yeah, but he doesn't do true push-ups. It's all bullshit.
All right. We'll get you out of here. Last minute on this. Amal mentioned Oregon State. I've been kind of high because I think DJU was given a short end of the stick in that scheme that he was offensively at Clemson. Did you see any of him against San Jose State? What'd you make of his play?
I thought he played very well, and I think he's in the right offense because Jonathan Smith's going to put the quarterback under center sometimes, line up with two backs, and they run the ball very well. Oregon State has thrived the last 2 years, and particularly last year, on running the ball, play action pass, playing good defense. They don't need DJ to win the game. Now, it's nice when he can, and I think he can, but they need DJ to manage the game and not turn the ball over, because they have a great offensive line, very good running backs. Jonathan Smith, I think, is a tremendous, he's not the coordinator, but a tremendous offensive mind and does a nice job with that offense, him and Lindgren. And I think that they will just continue to tell DJ, throw it away, take a sack, just don't screw it up. And if he does that, he's going to have a good year. And I thought he looked very good against San Jose State.
Nick Aliotti, Pac-12 Network Analyst. Good to talk to you, sir. Thank you very much.
Anytime, guys. I enjoy it. You guys have a great day.
You too. Every time somebody says anytime, I want to try it. Like, call him tonight. Be like, Nick, what's going on, man? I'm just sitting at home. I got nothing going on. All right, we'll come back. We're going to talk about adding wins at the margins. We'll tell you what we mean here on Sharp Money.